Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thank you all for coming. We'll start today with our morning prayer.
From page 187 of Miscellany. May the divine light of Christian Science that lighteth every enlightened thought illumine your faith and understanding, exclude all darkness or doubt, and signal the perfect path wherein to walk, the perfect principle whereby to demonstrate the perfect man and the perfect law of God. In the words of St. Paul, now the end of the commandment is charity, out of a pure heart, and of a good conscience, and of faith unfeigned. And St. John says, for this is the message that ye heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. May the grace and love of God be and abide with you all. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you very much. Watching point, Linda.
Watching point number 63. Watch lest you endeavor to cast out wrong thoughts without including wrong thinking in this effort. We have the thought and the thinking of the thought. The effort to cast out wrong thoughts is palliative and temporary. The claim of wrong thoughts will assail us until we remove our capacity to think wrong thoughts. Evil suggestions will come as long as one believes that he is receptive to them. Only when one neutralizes this wrong receptivity by knowing that God's child is open only to God's thoughts will the latter be established as man's native and natural state of consciousness. The only way to be certain that your radio would never again receive anything from an undesirable station would be to fix it so that it could never again be turned to that particular wavelength. Mrs. Eddy once wrote, quote, there is nothing in me that corresponds with or responds to any form of evil, end quote.
Thank you. Okay, comments on that?
Well, I just love this watch because it seems like if you, well, that you come from a history where you've been exposed to certain type of thinking that you're kind of been exposed, it keeps coming to you. It's like it's drawn to you. And I felt like this was just such a beautiful treatment to cut it off, that you don't have to have it.
So true. Thank you. Anyone else?
Well, having wrong thoughts is something you think, oh, you do now, you do later, whatever. But wrong thinking is ongoing.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I never really looked at it that way. You know,
right.
It's there all the time, but you think it's all, it's just something comes once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a wrong thought maybe would come once in a while, but mm-hmm. The wrong thinking, yes.
It's ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Somebody else... somebody told me once that their teacher had mentioned how with like sensuality, you know, the idea that human beings are, or humanly, we are, you know, prone to those kinds of thoughts. And the point that the teacher was making that was that if that was really true, then, you know, like advertising wouldn't have to bombard people with certain kinds of images to sort of, initiate that kind of those kinds of thoughts. And so the point that they were making is that it's not really natural for us to be that way. It's something that is being suggested, right, or provoked, and so like to recognize that we're not prone to these kinds of thinking, those kinds of thoughts, or those kinds of appetites or desires. It's just something that is being trying to be put on us, and we need to know that we can't be drawn to those kinds of thoughts.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, it's and they call it aggressive animal magnetism because it's very aggressive. It's all over the place. The billboards, certainly your computers, things can pop up. But I know Mrs. Evans used to tell us that, what is it, men get a sexual thought every
4 seconds, I was told.
Whoa. I don't know who's that.
How often was
four
that?
Seconds. Holy Moses. Every 4 seconds. How can they do
that? How can you live?
Remember what Mrs. Evans, I don't think it was 4 seconds, but it was
under 10, that's what I heard. Definitely under 10.
Wow,
it was frequent.
So, yeah, you have to get to the root of all of this if you're prone to that kind of thinking. Or, as Linda was saying, you know, I grew up in, it was a good home, but it was relatively negative. And I just ended up thinking a lot of negative, fearful thoughts that I thought were my own. And I had to really work. It didn't go easy to get rid of those. And I didn't even know that. I didn't know it was wrong. It's just the way I thought. And I had to find out it was a sin.
Yes, I think it just becomes a habit of that's the way one thinks. I used to just think fearfully all the time. Being, as I've said before, we'll be in a very happy so-called situation and I'm thinking wrong, what's going to go wrong? And yeah. Sure, something went wrong because that was my pattern of thinking, just negative, fearful thinking.
Yes. And always anticipating or dreading what was around the corner. So all of those, that kind of thinking has to be exposed and gotten rid of and then replaced with the truth. And that's why Mrs. Eddy's short article in Miscellany, What Our Leader Says, is so important. And what does she say in that article?
Good thoughts are impervious armor.
Yeah, good thoughts are an impervious armor. When you fill your thought up with the good, and that is why joy and gratitude are two essential ingredients to any healing. This is not a suggestion. If you want to be healed, you're going to have to express joy and gratitude. And this is why. Otherwise, you are this sink. I think Bruce talked about that yesterday at the Bible study. You're a sink that's going to attract all these negative thoughts. You've got to be expressing the godlike qualities.
Be a fountain instead of a sink.
That's right, a fountain. Be a fountain instead of a sink. What were you going to say, Florence?
Yes, and I think also this letter that she wrote to James Neal is also addressing this. She says, my beloved student, pray daily. Never miss praying, no matter how often. Lead me not into temptation. Scientifically rendered, lead me not to lose sight of strict purity. Clean, pure thoughts. Let all my thoughts and aims be high, unselfish, charitable, meek, spiritually minded. With this altitude of thought, your mind is losing materiality and gaining spirituality. And this is the state of mind that heals the sick. Your loving teacher, Mary Baker Eddy.
It's just beautiful. So this is what we're all striving to do, to think this way.
Yeah. Go ahead. Because I never thought that, you know, the fearful sense that came was a temptation. You know, I just accepted it. Oh, my goodness. You know, fear again, anxiety, worry. It wasn't clean, pure thoughts. And this is what she's saying. Lead us not into temptation. So praying daily. No, don't let me accept any of this. Keep my thinking pure.
Thank you very much. And you see, in doing this, this is preventative work. Because if you go around negative thinking, you think maybe no one else knows it. Well, people do feel it. People in your home will feel it. Your pets.
I just want to say a few things there about this negative thinking. I grew up also in a family where my grandmother had a little saying in Spanish is piensa mal y acertarás, which translated is think the worst and you won't be too far wrong. And I have to say that as a child, when she said that, was really ingrained in me to the point that I still remember that saying, and really, it colors your experiences, you know, as you go through life, because you if somebody does something nice or somebody, even your relationships with others, it starts coloring that, oh well, maybe this person is not really as good as what they're demonstrating or this and that. So it's really a torture. I mean, because it's not a good thing. But in my family, that was like almost, you know, and it was very damaging. I have to say, it's costing me a lot to overcome that.
Yeah, that's why you don't want to instill that in a child, because then they have to unlearn that.
And the way it gets uninstilled is to impersonalize evil and recognize and accept the allness of God, good. Because all of this fear and anxiety and all of this expectation of bad things and stuff is a belief that there's a power other than God. The belief that matter has power, or that something somewhere, or people have power other than what God has given them. And when you raise it up out of the personal to God, then you begin to handle the fear. And this idea of, you know, not being fearful and or of dwelling on the good, it's not a naive, la-di-da, airy-fairy kind of attitude. Because when you are at one with God, when there are things that you need to be aware of, when the devil's, you know, going to try something on you, you'll be aware of it, but you won't fear it. You will be aware of it as its master.
It's a huge, huge difference. Thank you. That explains it very well. And you see, so you have opportunities all day to catch the fearful thought, and to do as Gary said, to realize you're believing in a power apart from God, get back to the first commandment, and to cleanse your thought of the fearful negative thinking. And it takes work, but especially at first, and especially when it seems to be so aggressive, or especially when you've let it go on for so long, and then it seems to have taken place with experiences or health problems or other things in your life, so it just compounds it. But that's okay. That doesn't make it real. It's still always what it always has been, an aggressive mental suggestion that you've just accepted, and you can unaccept it and get rid of it. And it's joyous work. What else are you going to do? So we're in the fight every day. We put our armor on. And the more you do it, the more sensitive you'll become to the negative suggestions to kick them out. They won't seem normal. They will no longer seem like your thoughts. Dardy?
No, I'm trying to be quiet.
Oh. That's why you made all that noise.
It's the opposite of it, so.
Yeah, right. Yes.
One thing that I found interesting about Christian Science is that no prayer to God is not answered, is left void. There's always an answer. And then I realize that if I'm thinking negative, that's a negative prayer, and that becomes unfortunately answered also. So that's why it's so important, and why I'm working hard at trying to always have it a positive thought. And I thank this church for pointing that out. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's what it means when it says, so somewhere in the Bible, my expectation is from God.
Yeah, my expectation is from the Lord.
Regardless of what's going on, I do have a positive expectation. And the positiveness is whatever God says, I will accept. And that's because I know it's the truth.
And this process is called being born again. It's the new birth. It goes on hourly, as Mrs. Eddy says. And it's something we have to accept lovingly. You can't complain about it. That only makes it worse and more real. Just do it. And the more you do it, the better. It's like flexing your muscles. You'll get stronger with it. And you'll have more victories. And your life will be so much better. And as Gary said, it's not always, you don't necessarily not have problems. But when they come up, you won't be so afraid of them because you're in that, the right mind that knows the allness of God and the nothingness of error.
I think another caution I must say is if you don't take care, then because fear or anxiety feels so uncomfortable, you'll be fighting to get rid of the discomfort so much that your time is wasted on the fighting to get rid of the discomfort instead of the knowing that that fear wasn't true to the begin with. And of course, all, the allness of God is what's real.
And I always go back to that, our daily duty, not being made to forget or to neglect our duty to God, our leader, and mankind. When you're going through this fearful, negative thinking, you have totally forgotten and neglected your duty. And because of that, you will suffer until you stop. And all the praying and practitioner help in the world can't change that. You've got to stop it. And it's selfish. Ultimately, it is selfish. And that is like a slap on the face to me at times when I'm about to indulge in some negative torrent or pity party or whatever else. I'm forgetting and neglecting my duty. I've got God's work to do, and I can't be going off on this other path. And it helps tremendously. And that's why it focuses you off your problem onto what you've got to do. And that's always health-giving. Jeremy?
I just was thinking, since coming here, I've really tried to learn the difference between just imagination and what is coming from God. You know, when a situation would used to present itself, I just would imagine all these all these possibilities. I never knew what to choose, never knew how to take care of it. Now I just realize that was a trap the moment that happened. And I think, you know, maybe that 4 seconds that people are thinking about sex is really just, you know, every 1 second somebody, they're imagining something, and it's just that interval that it comes up for them, you know. But to let go of that and just be like, all right, all this hypothetical stuff, I just got to drop. I have my work in front of me, and I take care of it and let the rest of that go.
Yeah. Live in the present. Tomorrow will take care of itself. Okay. Jeffrey, you want to read our subject is love today, our golden text is 1 John.
Be loved. If God so loved us, we ought also to love one another.
Thank you. This is a beautiful lesson, and Elizabeth wrote this. And the responsive reading, both Linda and Jeremy wrote on the forum about greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. So, Linda, you want to?
Well, for me, I realized that him laying down his life was getting, it wasn't personal. I realized when I'm worrying about what others think, to make them happy, avoid doing the right thing because of consequences, that's all personal sense. And that's not unselfish or laying your life down. That's all about yourself. And that was no room for God and his will. So if we're to do what Jesus did, then I'm grateful to be learning not to do that.
Yeah, that again, that's this wrong train of thinking. that takes you in an opposite direction than the straight and narrow path. And Jeremy.
Well, thinking about the greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends, just really had me thinking this week about how, you know, Jesus, Mrs. Eddy, people in the church have laid down decades to do this work. And, you know, I used to just think, you know, if you lay down your life, that's just like the momentary thing. But, you know, that's just the counterfeit of what's real. What's real is put everything aside so that we do this work for the world, for God, our leader, and mankind. So,
thank you. It is this type of thought that has enabled this church to do this work. It requires this diligence, and some people don't want to do it. And I try not to get disappointed at times because people seem so promising, and you know they're going to come to the watches and they're going to do this and that, and then whoops, we don't. They're gone. So I'm grateful for those who have remained faithful and steady in this work. It's not easy to do it week after week, month after month, year after year. So when people ask, well, how come you're the only independent Christian Science church? And as far as I know, we are. Well, there are many reasons for that. And that is one of them, the dedication to this, the 24/7 dedication. And all of you, especially those not in Plainfield, but listening, you know, whatever you contribute, we're very, very grateful for, because it all adds up. So, and God directs what is right for you and how to contribute in your own unique way. And Karen wrote about that a bit. And they shall be of thee, shall build the old waste places, thou shalt raise up the foundations of many generations, and thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the paths to dwell in. Do you want to speak to that, Karen?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay. Well, I was looking this up in Matthew Henry's commentary, and he said, those that now are of thee, thy princes and nobles and great men, shall have authority and influence as they never had, or those that hereafter shall be of thee, thy posterity shall be serviceable to their generation as thou art. They shall carry on and finish that good work which had begun long before, and shall be helped over the obstructions which had retarded the progress of it. They shall raise up to the top that building, the foundation of which was laid long since, and has been for many generations in the rearing. They shall raise up foundations which shall continue for many generations yet to come. They shall do that good which shall be of lasting consequence. They shall have the blessing and praise of all about them. They shall be called, and it shall be to thy honor, the repairer of the breach made by the enemy in the wall of the besieged city, which whoso has the courage and dexterity to make up or make good gains great applause. Happy are those who make up the breach, which virtue is running out and judgments are breaking in. That's all from Matthew Henry. And then I added, is it any wonder why Plainfield Church is accomplishing what is remarkable for such a small group of members? God is working his purpose out, which is so plain here to me. I am so grateful to have been led here to do my part in the raising up foundations which shall continue for many generations yet to come.
Thank you. That's very beautiful and very encouraging. I love that. And we shall be helped over the obstructions which had retarded the progress of it. Because that's a lot of what we face. The obstructions, the lack of understanding the science, the way it's been mistaught and misunderstood, which would create obstructions, people getting turned off to what they think it is, but it is not. So here it is, and we have known this. God is helping us and showing us the way, and we just focus on that, and he'll take care of the rest. And our website going to the four corners of the earth. Karen?
Yeah, it's remarkable. I'm still, every once in a while, I think about it, and I've only been a part of this for a very short time, a member for a very short time, and listening for, maybe over a year. But I'm still in awe of this, that the worldwide reach that this small band of people have, and that anything that even the smallest, a testimony or putting something on the post, it's just anything that we do, it's just reaching people that we have no idea who it's going to and what it's going to do. The smallest little thought. So, and then my teacher was, my practitioner, I think of her as my teacher, but, we just, every once in a while, talk about the awesomeness of the reach. And I've been a member of churches for a long time, but this is just, I'm so grateful for it. I just can't say enough about it.
No, thank you very much. And it is wonderful. And we are so grateful for all of you who have offered translations, and the fact that now these translators in the Middle East have arisen. And not only that, they're doing it and then they're converting to Christian Science by reading it. And we just know this is the leaven of truth. It's just working its work, God's purpose out. And there's no stopping it. It runs a free course.
And it makes sense in every language.
Yes. Yeah. I for a while I was concerned. I know Mrs. Eddy was very, she didn't want her textbook to be not translated exactly, because it is translated best in its native tongue, which is English. But I've had to trust, since these people came to us, that it had to be God's doing, and that the essence of the message is going to get through. And that's why also with every translation in whatever language, on the opposite page, we have it in English, which is what Mrs. Eddy required when she started this with the German was the first translation. So thank you all so much for all that you do to be part of this, because everything makes the whole, every little thing that's done, just as Karen said, creates a whole. And the more love and joy and effort you put into it, that's what people feel. And that's the attraction. We don't need marketing. We need the love, the spirit, the joy of God. That attracts.
And the healing.
Most definitely.
Is what attracts.
Now, the next... in the Bible, the first several verses are about, and I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none. This standing in the gap, we have talked about it before, and it's very important. So, Shardy, what did you write about it?
Well, because of learning about that here at Plainfield, and Mrs. Eddy talks about it, because she talks about right motives, and the love that's taught here gives all of us the strength to wait patiently for God to work on moral mind. Waiting patiently on God and standing in the gap has helped me so much. I gave a testimony once about a grandchild where I did this, and I prayed like I learned here, and he's returned, and everybody knows that, and he's so beautiful. And now I have another grandson, and I have the strength and courage to do the same thing, and I know that God will take care of it.
Thank you. And so just what exactly is standing in the gap?
Well, for me, it's knowing that no matter what looks like isn't there, and it doesn't look that godly, that and and I have to be careful how I pray. That's standing in the gap for me. I have to know that God is taking care of it. And if we're faithful to God, He will do that. He will do whatever needs to be done. And that's where we stand with God.
It is a form of praying for a situation or a person that doesn't know how to pray for themselves. Now, again, this is very important because in science we learn you don't pray for anyone unless you're asked to. But there is a responsibility when something comes into our experience to know the truth about it. That we cannot help but do. So if something comes to you, whether it's a grandchild, whether it's our nation, whether it's a neighbor that's wrong and suffering, we have this responsibility to correct it in our own thinking and to know the truth about it. And this has far-reaching effects. The lesson also says that pray for one another. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. So our prayers are very important. We're lifting our thought up to God and knowing that His power and presence are with whatever that situation is.
Isn't our watches really standing in the gap?
Yes.
Yes, it is. We're standing in the gap. The one we had Thursday about the, what am I going to call it? The cuckoo virus. The cuckoo virus. Because, well, Nancy said she didn't even want to learn how to pronounce the name of it. So now I give it names like that to make it, put it where it belongs in a mythological sense. It doesn't own a name. No. As Kimball says, someone told you you had pink feathers, you wouldn't believe it. So let's keep it not as a reality with some formal name that everyone's scared of, but as the cuckoo virus. I've had the elbow virus. I give them all these names just so I can keep a light touch on it and not
break.
Thank you. Laugh, get angry, or cry. Break the mesmerism. So anyway, we stay on that. But here, all these people believing in it. So no one has asked us. Well, that's not true. There has been a general from people asking for help. I do know that. But so we have to pray and know the truth as scientists do. And that's different from Christians because we're knowing the unreality of the whole thing. But we keep at it. We keep patient. And we will put the kibosh on it.
Yeah, I mean, our responsibility as Christian scientists is not to ever get mesmerized by a false picture, whether it calls itself a virus, whether it calls itself an unhappy home or a bad, something wicked going on in our nation or somewhere in the world. Our responsibility is not to get mesmerized. And By keeping our own thought correct, we help everything. We benefit everyone around us. But it's
obeying. Sorry.
Yeah. No. Because what is reality to us anyway? It's in our own consciousness, right? Two people can see the same thing and come out with two entirely different descriptions of what they see. Our job is to see what God created.
What were you going to say, Florence?
No, I'm agreeing. That is obeying that the duty, that daily duty. And also, it's if we get mesmerized, which is disobeying the duty, then we are dishonoring God's allness. And so that to me helps me to get on track and do what you're supposed to do. Because to accept anything, any erroneous thing as real, is denying God's allness.
Thank you. Parthens a while ago had sent me this little book. And it's not a Christian Science book. I will make that very plain. It's a Christian book, but it's called Stand in the Gap for Your Children. And it quotes that what we had in the lesson, Ezekiel 22. But he writes, the author, standing in the gap is serious business. The eyes of the Lord go back and forth looking for someone who will stand in the gap for someone else. Takes that unselfishness to have time every day to do our watch, to do this prayer, prayerful work. And then he says, when someone is away from God, there is a gap between that person and God. He is not able to fill that gap and come to God because his faith is too weak. Someone else is needed who is willing to pray and stand in faith in the gap between that person and God. By praying and standing in faith, the Christian builds a bridge for the weak person to come to God. This can be done for groups of people or even for an entire city or nation. But in this book, he's teaching you how to stand in the gap for your children. And that is what Shardy was talking about. And if it comes into our life, we have a duty to know that God's presence and power is with them, that they can hear God's voice. They have the mind of Christ. They are not separated from God. And you don't even have to tell them. In many cases, perhaps you're not even talking to whatever the person or whatever the situation is. But just knowing this truth is standing in the gap. And this person who wrote the book, he did this for a very wayward daughter who eventually came back and helped also write the book. And I love something that she says in here. It is time to stop talking to God about your problem and to begin talking to your problem about God. So let's see now. Are you just talking to God about your problem? Well, that's not even prayer. But the idea of talking to your problem about God. And that goes along with what Matthew 17. If ye have faith as a grain of a mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. You're talking to that mountain, whatever that mountain is, a unhappy child, a financial problems, a physical problem. You tell that mountain a few things and watch it go. Take the authority of Christ with you. You've built it into a mountain. Usually they start off as something very tiny, but you build it into some kind of a mountain. So yes, take your truth and keep at it until it goes. And then I love, and it was interesting, I guess it was Joe who said patience was mentioned, I don't know, 4 or 5 times in this lesson. And that verse in Science and Health, think about it. Wait patiently for divine love to move upon the waters of mortal mind and form the perfect concept. Patience must have her perfect work. This patience is so important. Think of that picture, to wait patiently for divine love to move upon the waters of mortal mind, all your churning mortal mind thought. Wait for it to come, and it will form the perfect concept. And one of the wonderful definitions of patience we were given here many years ago that I use to this day, and patience means active expectancy of good. Active expectancy of good. That goes back to what Gary says, where's your expectancy from? If you sit in your chair and you think you're praying, but as Pilar said, her grandmother told you, well, lots of luck with that. It's all not going to work out anyway. Well, that's not prayer. So even though, I mean, I was told a few things like that too. I was told, expect the worst, and then you'll be grateful if anything good happens. that was what I was told. So we've all got, maybe had some wrong teaching. So anyway, no, so you sit in your chair praying, and you're knowing this truth, and you're expecting, it's active expectation of God to come in and help you heal the problem, but no mortal outlining, not saying, God, I want it by next week. I've got an interview in 2 weeks. It's got to be there. Or I've got to pay this bill tomorrow. Or I've got to go on my vacation and I can't go with the hiccups or whatever you've got. Whatever it is. Because that's what people do.
Yes.
You cannot outline God to tell God what you want when you want it. And this is where the patience come in. You pray, but then you leave it to him. And usually when you've learned some lessons, and often it is in patience, the healing does come, sometimes so quietly you don't even notice it. Any more on that?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of points here. Patience is waiting for God to do what God does. And this is particularly important when you're dealing with others, like your family, children, those around you. You can't change them, but God can. And Mrs. Eddy says we have to have endless patience with others. There are a million minds, and everybody is, you know, working at their own speed and in their own way. And only God can move upon those waters. We can't force anybody to accept God or, you know, whatever. But we should also be impatient with ourselves. When our thought is wandering, we should not patiently turn it back to God. We should impatiently. Mrs. Eddy says she is impatient with a speck of dirt or a speck of dust. We should not be patient with error in our own thinking.
Yeah, that's no good. You can't just say, oh, well, I'm just going to go on thinking miserably for the next few years and be patient about it. That's called stupidity.
Yeah, you're not doing the work that you should be patiently with for the expectation. You're not.
So. Disobedient. We should turn on a dime. We should, when the right thought finally hits us, we should grab it immediately and run with it.
But yes, Mrs. Eddy talks about pitiful patience with their fears. She speaks of patience often, and it is definitely part of love to have that patience and compassion. We had a beautiful Bible study on compassion yesterday. If you weren't there, I hope you listen. And then Joe sent me a really beautiful letter by Mrs. Eddy, found in Lessons of the Seventh Day. And this goes along with the teachings of the Sermon on the Mount. And also it goes along with her article, Loving Your Enemies, Love Your Enemies. And Gary was indirectly quoting from taking offense. You know, not everybody's different. We're not going to get upset over things. Everyone comes from a different place. You don't know until you've walked in their shoes what they've had to deal with. So anyway, Gary will read this from Joe.
Oh, yeah, this is from Lessons of the Seventh Day. And it says, Didymor was a name used by God to highlight many developments in the divinity course on church. His first official duty outside of Chicago was Committee on Publication in New York City, where he became aware of animosities and irregularities concerning Augusta E. Stetson. These he nurtured and denounced, without realizing no reality in them. Later, he and his friend McClellan turned on her with vigor, just as they would turn one day on their fellow citizen from Chicago, Edward Kimball, the man who had virtually sponsored them. And then the letter, which is a letter to Mrs. A.E. Stetson, dated January 12, 2005, and signed Every Yours Lovingly, Mary Baker Eddy, reads, My precious student, let me comfort you with the lessons of my own experience and the proof of their value. The great teacher of you and me has said most emphatically, It is not enough that ye love them that love you, but I say unto you, love your enemies. I have learned from experience that we can never escape from the cruelty of our enemies in any other way than by loving them, as Jesus taught. And that this way gives us not only escape, but victory over them. Now, darling, just try this towards Mr. McCracken, who was the current COP and was condemning rather than healing Stetson and her church, and I am sure you will overcome yourself and him. I know you can do this, dear one, and triumph in this way. His office only lasts 1 year, and this year can be the happiest year of your life if only you will have faith enough in me to do as I ask, and have faith enough in our great teacher to believe that this demand must be met by us all before we can be real Christian scientists. Write me on receipt of this. You know in part how much I love you, and others know it, but you never will know this wholly till you overcome your enemies with love, if you have not already done so. I had to do as I do to others.
That's beautiful. And isn't that beautiful? Thank you, Joe, for finding that. And it was very perfect for this week's lesson and how our leader did it. And as I said yesterday, her love and compassion was how she got so much accomplished. Because, you know, hating people and going around and around, and this one did that, and this one did this, it's very exhausting.
It keeps it alive, too.
It keeps it alive. It's exhausting. You end up not getting work done. You can't focus. There's no good thing about it. But
it's worse than a waste of time.
Yes, far worse. And you're only damning yourself, as we've talked about it. But that was a beautiful example. And it also shows what was going on with Augusta Stetson. Because, you know, everyone has their opinion about what a terrible person she was. Well, according to Mrs. Eddy, she wasn't. And when you're doing a good work, people do rise up and sometimes do not like you for it. Lawrence, did you want to say something? Whoops, is she there?
Oops.
Yes.
Oh. Lawrence, if you're speaking, you're on mute.
Oh, no, I wasn't saying anything, though.
Okay, and anyone else want to speak on that? It certainly goes with the Sermon on the Mount. And so we develop this patience. We develop a great love. It's a divine love, not a human love. Human love will love humanly and then hate also. The divine love will not hate. It can't. It'll see.
It is incapable of anything else.
Yeah. And it will look on compassion upon the person. So, and in that, go ahead.
Now I have something to say. The citation in page 205, when he said, when we realize that there is one mind,
thank you,
the divine law of loving our neighbors as ourselves is unfolded. I don't think I've ever paid attention to that, but it really stood out, is that that is the loving that Jesus did, Mrs. Eddy did. And I think that's what she was doing here with Augusta Stetson. It all has one mind.
Yes. Yes. And you see the others, and Dittemore, I think Dittemore was the one too that turned on Carpenter and then later regretted it. But he was totally in the wrong mind. Believing these people or this in this error, and that did not heal the situation. So, as far as I know, Mrs. Eddy never excommunicated anyone. I think eventually Augusta Stetson was by the BOD, and that was only because Mrs. Eddy said, okay, you're going to have to learn whatever lessons you're going to have to learn. And we never excommunicate anyone either. They do it to themselves.
Just as an aside, I'm always, when I first came to New York, I remember going to the church that she, helped build on the west side on 91st, I believe, or 93rd. And in Central Park and Avenue, and it's a beautiful, beautiful church. And they had to sell the church and because lack of membership. But I always wondered about that. Why was she excommunicated? You know, the little that I have heard of her is that she was a very dedicated practitioner and teacher and Christian scientist. But anyways, that's all I wanted to say. It's a beautiful church.
Yeah. The same reason we were excommunicated.
Yeah. It's jealousy.
Envy and jealousy.
Rise in the ranks.
Rising up in the ranks within the human organization called the Boston Board of Directors.
And that's why Mrs. Eddy says to guard against that so thoroughly and diligently. So, and yes, now my understanding is that beautiful church has been made into condominiums. We will end with dominion within, self-surrender through love.
By Reverend Kratzer. There are many cases of chronic disease which are yielding to direct effort through argument in Christian Science, only slowly or seemingly thus far not at all, which will soon yield if the direct effort is supplemented by self-surrender through habitual love and gratitude to God. Ceasing to take the comforts and blessings of daily living as matters of course, and thinking mostly of those things of which we seem to be deprived, but following the suggestion of the psalmist, so frequently repeated by him, quote, "Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and for his wonderful works to the children of men," end quote. The ice which is upon the river or lake in midwinter did not form there in a day or a week, but represents the accumulation of the winter's cold. So a chronic disease manifest in the body did not get started there in a week or a month, but represents the accumulation of months or years of wrong thought and living. Could we turn upon the ice on the lake in midwinter the heat of a midsummer sun, we could cause it to break up and disappear in a very few days. But that is impossible. However, the continued shining of the sun of early spring, dispensing each day a comparatively slight amount of heat, before very long, breaks up and melts away the ice. The first day that the spring sun shines, the ice is apparently not affected at all, nor the second day, nor for many days. But finally, there comes a day when the ice is noticeably affected, even to the point of breaking in pieces. It was not alone that day's sunshine that accomplished this result, but the accumulation of the many days of shining that had gone before. So let us continue to cultivate spiritual thought by any and all methods, especially by love and gratitude to God, whether the disease seems to yield or not. If we do so persistently, not merely spasmodically, there will come a day when the disease will yield markedly. And this will be the result, not merely of the last day's spiritual work, but of the accumulation of our spiritual thought and growth. A wise man of the East has well said, quote, "Let no man think lightly of good, saying in his heart, it will not come nigh unto me. Even by the falling of water, drops of water pot is filled." So the wise man becomes full of good, even if he gather it little by little. Even a good man sees evil days, so long as his good thoughts and deeds do not ripen. But when his good thoughts and deeds ripen, then does the good man see good things. End quote.
Thank you all for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.